bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging. Every time I go out and pick me a fish.
Support for In the Garden comes from the Flower Farm. The 2015 season has ended, and thanking customers for supporting locally grown flowers. More information at 772-3464, the Flower Farm. Looking forward to next year's Garden Delights.
Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure. But it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure.
And welcome to In the Garden. I'm your host, Mindy Anderson. With me from Juneau, Alaska, every week during gardening season, Ed Byarski. Hello, Ed. Let's see here. Are you there? There we go.
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here. Really, I am.
I had the wrong button pushed this time, so thanks for sticking with me there. How are you, Ed?
I'm good. Doing doing indoor projects today, taking care of billing and paying bills, and but eating some of those tomatoes from the greenhouse as you mentioned earlier, and cleaning up seeds that I gathered earlier this fall, so I can package them up and sort it all. I've got fish boxes full of stems. Different kinds of primrose seed stems, flower stems, that are getting cleaned up. So they will be stashed away for the winter for replanting come spring. And, of course, thinking about all the cleanup work needs to be done and all that. But we still do have some nice fall color out there, even as the rain comes down. So I'm just happy to look out of the window at colorful stuff in addition to all the green that of the spruce trees and the hemlocks.
I was just looking at some trees the other day, or even yesterday, bright red ones around town, and you know, all the pretty yellow and orange. But the wind the last weekend here has really blown a lot of leaves off the trees, so that's falling quickly.
Here too, and one of the things that really certainly can help cheer us up, at least seeing, I really like the yellow leaves of the cottonwoods. Got to see a lot of them a couple of weeks ago when I was up in Haines, which are just beautiful and really, really does brighten things up in the contrast to the evergreens behind. And that's something I did way back when we first moved into the property 22 years ago. We actually took cottonwood cuttings, just some stems 4 or 5 feet long, stuck them in the ground at the back edge of our property. And so now we have these trees, which do give us the color contrast at this time of year, which is really nice. So like you say, there's some that still have quite a few leaves on them, and there's some of them that have lost most. Just depends on one tree to the next. But it really does help giving that extra contrast and to brighten up our gloomy fall days. It is what it is.
Yes, and speaking of brightening up, I know there's fuchsias, begonias, and all that sort of thing we talked about last week, that it is time to put them away and care for them for the winter, or let them go dormant, however you want to put that. But could you give us some tips on that? And then you mentioned earlier to me about cutting some of our fuchsias and starting some new ones. Maybe you could talk about that.
Sure. These, again, I don't know. I've had two light frosts here at my house. Not enough to kill back, even to kill back some potato plants. I've still got one patch I've got to dig potatoes from. But so our light frosts haven't knocked down, even killed off the dahlias, which are quite tender, but it's more a matter of the rain are causing them to rot, the leaves and the flowers that are still on there. So bringing those inside, initially at least to dry off, cut off the stems, and then pull the, dump them out of their pots, if they're potted, or if some people, of course, grow them in the ground too, and wash off the roots, tubers, those big fat tubers that you have underneath that are their food storage, And then they can be packed away. Some folks pack them into shredded paper in boxes. Some do it in peat moss. Some may do it in straw, or if you're lucky enough to potentially have some kind of dry sawdust. Any of those are good. So that, and the other alternative is even just getting paper grocery bags, put the whole clump of tubers, or cut the, divide them into pieces that'll fit into a paper grocery bag and into a box, and then store those in a place that won't freeze in the wintertime. So that's really the critical thing, is finding a spot that is cool, hopefully maybe 40 degrees, 35 to 40 degrees or so is good, and won't freeze, but also doesn't get too warm, because we don't want them to start sprouting too soon in the springtime or late winter.
Okay. I'm not somebody who has a good luck with tubers, so I generally don't plant begonias. Boy, there are some beautiful ones around town, like at, of course, at the bookstore, and you have really nice begonias at your house. So I can't really add to that too much.
That is unfortunate, because certainly your conditions, my conditions, are very good. And again, when we were over in Ireland too, we saw just some tremendous displays of the tuberous begonias. They had them in pots, but they had a lot of the large pots on additional stands. I mean, they had some of their stands with begonias that were 6 to 8 feet tall, 4 feet across, big circular, almost like kind of like a Christmas tree, sort of, multicolored. And again, in the cool conditions like we have here, even with the rain, ideally we plant them in good potting soil that drains well, and we feed them, and they do thrive. And I've seen them also up in Anchorage too. So the cool summer conditions that we have, and long daylight hours, all of that helps to make them flower. And mine are still in full bloom here. Lots of them are. Some of them that are a little more exposed to the pounding rain are looking rather tattered. So again, that's one that if you don't get a hard frost to kill the top growth off, you can just, again, bring them inside, or before you bring them inside the big pots, you can gently snap the stems off them, because they're quite a crisp stem, and brittle. They're definitely brittle. And then allow them to dry, and then pull them, gently dig them out of the pots. Shake off soil, and again, you can just pull them out of the pots, get the most of the soil on the outside, lay them out in trays to dry out, say in a cool garage, and then take more of the soil off, and again, pack them into paper bags and a cardboard box is just fine. And you may want to label, of course, for all of these, it's good if you have a plan or want to share some of these. If you label the individual tubers or the clumps, the dahlia tuber clumps, with colors, or, you know, you can certainly could have, maybe earlier, taking pictures of some of these to help in your record keeping for what they are or where what color they're going to be again after you've taken off all that.
Okay. And then, so just the cool, dry place. And should we be, no water, just leave them down there?
They don't need any water. I mean, it's worth checking. I mean, with the begonias, again, as long as you're, that's where putting them in the paper bag in a cardboard box is good.
Yeah.
So they aren't going to dry up and shrivel. But that's where initially, though, you do need to dry out the tubers so that you can get most of the soil off. And just clean them off with your fingers. So you just set them out in, say, in open cardboard boxes or open trays in a place where they'll dry.
Mm-hmm.
And then pack them into the paper bags and such.
Okay.
So, and then once, you know, usually we get started with the radio program maybe in March, or, you know, sometimes late February or March. But it's worth then checking on some of these to see when they start to put some little bud sprouts. It's like they kind of know when they should be sprouting, and, you know, it's too bad there wasn't some sort of an alarm, or put on your calendar when to check them for the beginning of their sprouting, so that you can then put with the begonias, I usually just put them in a big plastic tray with a couple of inches of potting soil in the bottom that's dampened, and set the begonia tubers on them to begin with till they get a bit of sprouts and they start to sprout a few roots, and then from there they will go into full-size pots, or maybe just barely big enough pots to begin with, depending on how much room you've got to have under your lights to get them growing. So they, and we're trying to push them a bit so that we can have flowers sooner, and then get them into the big pots with fertilizer, slow-release fertilizer in the pots for them, say by April, so that they can really start to grow and produce lots more flowers next year.
So if you have a question for Ed, give us a call here at the radio station for In the Garden, 772-3808 or 888-772-3808. How old are some of your begonias, Ed?
The oldest ones I have are probably 5 or 6 years old.
Uh-huh.
There's a woman in town here who, she's given a couple of programs for the Garden Club and the Master Gardeners. She's got some that are more like 10 to 12-year-old tubers that weigh, I mean, they're the size, oh, they're 8 inches across. I mean, they weigh several pounds each. And she does something a little bit more before she stores them. She actually dusts them with a fungicide before she stores them away, too, to help improve their survival odds. Because occasionally you can get a fungus, can get in, particularly, like we mentioned, about snapping off the tops of those snapping off the stems from the tubers. So then it is kind of a big open wound. So if you've got a fungicide, or you could probably do a very light dusting of baking soda or even wood ashes to, again, which are both antibiotic, and they're less, there's some of the fungicides that are fairly nasty chemicals that you want to be very careful if you're handling those. I know she says she handles her tubers that were stored away. When she puts them away after she dusts them with the fungicide, she makes sure she wears gloves and at least a dust mask. So again, you want to be careful about that if you're doing it. But if you know you've had some problems in the past, and the other thing too is last year, at least in Juneau, we had quite a problem with powdery mildew on the plants, on begonia plants. So we want to, if you've had that problem, you may not want to keep those, you know, if they're individual bulbs that you maybe have quarantined, separated those plants, they were having problems, or just get rid of them altogether and start fresh.
Okay.
Because we don't want to be reinfesting the plants with that. And even though we can use the baking soda spray on them, they are a bit on the tender side. And, again, with the rain that can splash the fungus from one plant to the other, we don't want it to get transferred in our individual handling of these either.
All right. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, okay.
Over.
Oh, all right. I thought that we lost you for a second. Okay. I think that's quite a bit on begonias. What about putting away the flowering fuchsias.
And
you talked about a way
that
to.
We can. A lot of folks, of course, treat them as an annual. You know, they buy a nice hanging basket in the springtime, and then they just toss it at the end of the season, or bury it in the garden, or throw it in the compost pile. But again, those can really be grown on, and they can grow larger and larger over time. They are a woody shrub in the wild, where they are native to Chile and South America. But again, I think I mentioned last week that while we were traveling in Ireland, we saw fuchsia, very large fuchsia hedges and bushes, that some of these that were 8 feet tall and 10 or 12 feet across, or hedges that are just, you know, plant growing along roadsides all over the place. So some are more hardy than others. So again, here, not really hardy enough to overwinter as they are, but certainly down in the Seattle area, they can, they just cut them back. Usually they're cut back some to the near the ground, and they'll sprout back vigorously if fertilized well. but a lot of them will tolerate temperatures down to 20 degrees or so. So with mine, I've got a bit of a mixture. I don't even know anymore unless I look up the names, but they can be grown, especially the ones that are more upright to begin with, they can be grown into small shrubs. That also means you have to, you know, gradually move them up into bigger and bigger pots each year. But otherwise what a lot of folks will do with their just standard hanging baskets, they'll cut them back to maybe 4 inches tall, and that just, you know, give them a hard haircut, essentially. Make sure you remove any remaining leaves that are still on the plants, and that includes cleaning off the soil surface of any old leaves there too. I will normally, with mine, I'll clip them back slightly, but I'll do a little pruning on them. But I'll keep some of the tall stems, and then usually I'll get some dye back anyway in storage. But I'll also spray them down, wash them down with the soap spray solution that we use for aphids. It's the sort of thing where you may not see many aphids on your plants that are hanging baskets or potted outside. But if we leave those, bring them inside into a little warmer place in our garage, root cellar, crawl space, they can really start to multiply. And it's disheartening to go down to check these because when we're storing these in the, again, same cool, dark place just above freezing, you go down there, say in midwinter in January or something, to give them their monthly watering. So we want to keep those roots just barely alive. Still alive and but not sprouting too much, and find that you've got these tender, pale pink shoots starting, and they're just covered with aphids. So it's really worthwhile washing them down quite thoroughly with soap spray before we pack them away for the winter.
Yeah, that would be disappointing.
It's a problem, and then the same old thing where especially if you've got multiple plants, maybe only one or two of them have aphids, but they're pretty easily spread, whether we're handling them or if they're, I mean, in my root cellar, I usually have them. So I've got maybe 10 or 12 fuchsias, and they're all pretty close together. So if one plant gets aphids, then the one next to it is likely to get aphids too.
Yeah.
And I would rather not do that.
Yeah. Okay. What else about the fuchsias? You mentioned...
One of the things, this time of year when we're cutting them back anyway, this is a time when folks can make a whole lot more fuchsias very easily from the pieces we're cutting off. They're one of the easiest plants to root. They're almost as easy as pussy willows. You know, you put them in a little bit of water and they'll sprout roots. With these, usually what I do, I'll take about a 3 or 4 inch tip cuttings from them. I will take most of the leaves off. I'll usually leave one leaf on them, perhaps two. When I look at the cuttings that I'm taking, I want them to have had at least two or three leaves, because that's where the root sprouts tend to grow from, near the leaf bases.
Okay, you say you're cutting them off the end?
So if I take my cuttings and clip my leaves back, or pinch them back just with fingers, and then again I'll have a little bowl of my soapy water that I mentioned for, like, same as we use for spraying for aphids, and I'll just slosh them in the individual cuttings in that soapy water, and then from there I'll have pans or trays of some damp potting soil, or even damp sand works quite well. And you can certainly dip these cuttings, the bottom third or so, in rooting hormone or root powder. But they really don't need it. Most of the times I don't even bother with that. That they'll just put them into the damp sand or damp potting soil, cover them over with a lot of times I'll use these big plastic containers that salads come in.
Okay.
Or you can put some saran wrap over the whole cover, or if you've got if you're using the 10-20 trays, you know, planting trays, you can buy the clear covers to go over those and cover them. So, because you want to keep the moisture level high for the cuttings that are going to be rooting, so they don't dry out. If they dry out, then they're likely to die. And then underneath, I've got my just fluorescent shop lights, my 4-foot shop lights I use for starting plants, and put these trays underneath that. And it usually only takes 2 or 3 weeks for the fuchsias to start rooting. Very often we'll see that the leaves that you left on there may fall off, in which case you lift it up and just pull those out so they don't rot and start fungus growing there too. But they're really easy to grow from cuttings, and then once they are rooted, after a few weeks to a month, then you can look at potting them into individual small, like 3 or 4 inch trays to grow them till springtime. Although, then the thing is, do you have the space to keep them all going? Because they will grow and sprout just fine underneath the lights, and very often will give you flowers. I've got some flowering now that I took as cuttings about a month and a half ago, and they're a foot tall already and flowering.
Wow.
So you can get a whole lot of plants from the cuttings you can take from just one fuchsia.
Okay, so you said snip it off the end. So I'm picturing, you know, the fuchsia basket hanging or the fuchsia plant hanging in a basket with other plants. Snip off the end 3 or 4 inches. Is that what you said?
That's right. And again, so the end will have, should have a couple of buds,
uh-huh.
You know, like leaves, where you see where leaves came off. You know, there are still leaves on them. Mine certainly have plenty of leaves on them. But again, I clip off most of those. So I want to have at least one leaf, you know, where leaf bases are, a node, so that's going to go at least under the soil surface that you have them in your pots or your trays for rooting.
Okay.
Again, that's where they are most likely to root more of. And then you want to have at least one node or maybe two above the soil surface, and that's where the new shoots will start to grow from.
Okay. And what if they have, let's say, those pods? Okay, they flowered and the pods are there. Remove the pods.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely remove the seed pods, the seed fruits. They are fruits, really. Remove those. And if there's flower buds, if you start seeing, you know, a lot of times, even in the just being in that damp soil, you may still have some new flower buds want to come out. But initially, you want to pinch those off. You only want leafy growth to begin with, because it takes a lot of energy to grow those flowers. So while they are trying to root, you don't want to have flowers trying to grow at the same time. So you pinch off any flowers or flower buds also.
Okay. Anything else that you want to mention about gardening? I know I've got my bulbs in, and I've got, you know, the high school delivered the seaweed this weekend, so that's good. I've got a bunch of seaweed to spread out, and I even did some weeding the other day, which felt great, getting some of the weeds up before I put everything.
Can, you know, we have, of course, the buttercups are probably our worst weed around us here.
Mm-hmm.
Dandelions are very persistent and, of course, a challenge to get all of the dandelion root out. But the other one that we have that's very common, it's that little mustard with little tiny, very tiny leaves and very small white flowers that spreads like mad. They call it a winter annual, because it grows under very cool conditions. It's an ongoing project, is pulling them in my primrose propagating beds. I don't want to get them established in there shooting seeds out. But they will keep growing and growing. You know, it's getting cooler here, but we're getting into, you know, 30s and 40s. But they're just fine and happy, and, of course, they're plenty moist. So any weeds we can get out now is going to save us time and energy next spring. With having to pull weeds that have overwintered. You know, certainly the buttercups overwintered, many of the leaves die back, but sometimes some of those will stay kind of evergreen too, and we can see them. So anytime we see weeds, anytime we have, you know, not frozen ground, pulling more of them is just going to save us time in the future when we're really getting ambitious about growing and gardening. If we've got compost, if you made a compost pile this summer, last spring, potentially, and you're digging into it and you're really not satisfied that it's completely broken down, but you can still use that stuff. Say if you've got empty garden boxes or beds, you can start dig a trench down the middle of that bed and bury some of this half, you know, the compost isn't finished, maybe, but it's rotting away. And if you bury that in your garden beds, then cover the whole thing over with some plastic, then the worms and the other fungus and the good stuff that's working in your soil can be work on breaking that down more over the winter time. So again, next spring, you can be out there and gardening sooner. Mixing in manure if you've got it. If you've got rabbit manure, chicken, horse, whatever, mixing some of that into the in the beds, and then make sure you have a good layer of soil on top. So that'll keep the worms active, working through all this manure and breaking it down, improving your soil while we hibernate or while we travel to a warm and sunny place somewhere
yes.
else.
Yeah. Well, as I was planting bulbs the other day in the garden bed, the new one that I put alongside the driveway, you saw that one.
Yep.
I was happy to see lots of worms. So already, it's looking good. Can't wait for next season to start.
Sure.
Even though we're
again,
just ending.
Having the, yeah, like you mentioned about hauling seaweed, you
yes.
know, the worms will be active under the seaweed, but the slugs do not like seaweed. So again, that can be somewhat preventive, at least, or even to potentially killing slugs if we're using a lot of seaweed around our perennials. Don't pile the seaweed right on top of the crowns of the perennials, like on top of the delphiniums or peonies
mm-hmm.
or right on top of primroses. You know, kind of put it around the plants if you can. You know, when you're doing your cleanup work, leave some short stems where you cut your perennials off. That way you can see where they are or were and will hopefully sprout back in the spring. But using that seaweed is really great, and again, that can help discourage the slugs. There's plenty of them out there. I've seen them. You know, every time I'm turning things over, I pull up a cabbage. There's slugs underneath them, of course. But you know, doing this cleanup now really is great stuff to get ahead for the spring. And you know, like you say, the planting we're doing, the bulbs, the garlic, putting in a few kale or spinach seeds to try for a little experimental patch that can be covered with some plastic, little low hoops, and they will. Even if they don't sprout this fall, they will sprout very early in the springtime. So, you know, this gardening can be sometimes a competitive sport, too, when we're trying to get our first salad greens, first flowers, first bulbs of whatever sort to brag about to the neighbors or over the radio.
Okay, Ed, thank you so much for joining us today. I'll let you get back to your seed saving and tomato eating.
Oh, yeah. We'll enjoy them as long as we can.
All right, Ed. Thank you, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Very good. Thanks,
okay.
Cindy.
Bye-bye.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a heart.
Support for In the Garden comes from the Flower Farm. The 2015 season has ended, thanking customers for supporting locally grown flowers. More information at 772-3464. The Flower Farm, looking forward to next year's garden delights.
Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.